Bernard Klatt was one of the tens of thousands of technical workers in Silicon Valley, 350 miles north of Los Angeles. These intense engineers, predominantly men, populated the 20 square miles south of Stanford University in increasing numbers after World War II. They created a technological paradise that spawned first the semiconductor, then the microprocessor, and finally, the personal computer. An electrical engineer, Klatt worked as a technician at Digital Equipment Santa Clara, servicing and troubleshooting the company's computers. For Klatt, a tall, dark-complexioned Canadian who was aloof and formal with strangers, as for many others in Silicon Valley, computing was part vocation and part passion. He lived with his wife in a two-story apartment building in Santa Clara, several blocks off El Camino Real, Silicon Valley's main commercial thoroughfare. The building was one of thousands built as Silicon Valley exploded with new industry in the 1960s, a contemporary prefab structure with thin walls and a kitchen separated from the living room by a belly-high divider that served simultaneously as a wall, counter, and breakfast table. Like many in Silicon Valley, Klatt had given over his spare bedroom to his computers. But while others tinkered with inexpensive personal computers, Klatt was busying himself with a surplus Digital Equipment minicomputer, one of the company's most successful computers in the 1960s. The machine, known as PDP-8, was awkward to program by today's standards, but it was one of the first computers that didn't require an industrial-strength life support system. Klatt was able to power it by simply plugging it into his apartment's wall outlet, an unusual feature for large computers of its time. Klatt decided to make his computer useful to a wider audience. Working with a friend, he wrote a program in the version of the basic computer language used on the PDP-8 that would allow a caller with a modem to dial in and transmit and receive messages. The PDP-8 stored the messages and then waited to display them for the next caller. This turned it into a bulletin board system, or BBS for short. Bulletin boards, like Klatt's, grew in popularity in the 1980s, spreading around the United States as part of the personal computer explosion. They were a little like neighborhood bulletin boards found in laundromats or community centers, offering lawn-cutting services and free kittens, but with more vitality. Since messages could be appended to other messages and categories could be organized to be scanned quickly by computer, the systems subdivided into special interest categories. Most of the discussions were about computers, but subjects ran the gamut from science fiction to odd sexual practices. Private messages could be left for a particular user, while public messages were accessible to anyone who logged in. Callers could check in every day to see what had been added and to append their own comments. A kind of electronic stream of consciousness emerged as BBSs became the digital substitute for a neighborhood chat on the front stoop. By 1980, there were well over 1,000 BBSs around the country. Today, there are at least 10 times as many. They covered a remarkable variety of features. Some permitted callers to store and retrieve software. This in turn gave rise to the world of free software and shareware. Some programmers made substantial sums of money by giving their software away on approval, requesting that the users send payment only if they found it valuable. Inevitably, by the early 1980s, private BBSs had emerged as well. Legendary boards like Pirate's Cove in Boston permitted callers to download, using modems to transfer to their own computers, commercial software without paying for it, and shared advice on how to break software copy protection schemes. Some of the pirate boards were well known, their telephone numbers posted widely. Other boards were more secretive, accessible only to a limited membership. Klatt's bulletin board, called 8BBS, was one of the nation's first bulletin boards for phone freaks. Bernard Klatt had a fanatical commitment to freedom of speech. After putting his system online in March of 1980 and publishing its number on several other systems, he insisted that his board be a free haven for its users. The ground rules, which were set out for new callers in an introductory computer message, were simple. Notice: uncontrolled message content. Proceed at your own risk. 8BBS management specifically disclaims any responsibility or liability for the contents of any message on this system. No representations are made concerning accuracy or appropriateness of message content. No responsibility is assumed in conjunction with message privacy. 8BBS acts in the capacity of a common carrier and cannot and does not control the content of messages entered. As a result, within months after 8BBS first began operation, a ragtag collection of phone freaks and computer aficionados had discovered it and established it as one of the nation's premier clandestine electronic meeting places. Anyone dialing in was immediately struck by the dedication that the community of several hundred regular callers had to the subculture of phone freaking. They were attracted by the notion that they were participating in some kind of high-technology avant-garde. Others called just to browse or lurk, reading posted comments without making their presence known. 8BBS was frequently busy around the clock. Soon the board had national scope. Callers dialed in from as far away as Philadelphia. Some would place their calls using purloined telephone credit card numbers to avoid long-distance charges. Others would exchange illegal information, credit card numbers, computer passwords, and technical information on telephone networks and computers were all stored and read on 8BBS. It was impossible to tell whether the person sitting at the other end of a message was a skilled professional systems programmer or a teenager in the family den perched in front of a Commodore 64. It was in December of 1980 that both Roscoe and Susan, already locked in a bitter war, found their way to 8BBS. For several months they became regular callers, leaving general tips and trading information, while at the same time, as many freaks are prone to do, flaunting their particular skills. Even their first messages were revealing. Susan was ever the seducer. Message number 4375 is 14 lines from Susan Thunder to all at 4:38:02 on 4th December, 80. Subject, computer freaking. I am new in computer freaking and don't know that much about systems and access. I have, however, been a phone freak for quite a while and know a lot about the subject of telephones, I think. Anyway, I would very much like to chat with anyone interested in sharing information, especially about computers. By the way, I am a 6'2" blonde female with hazel eyes, weighing 140, and I enjoy traveling a lot. If anyone can suggest any neat places to go on weekends, let me know. Roscoe was the cocky, self-styled techno-wizard, breathless in his first private message to Bernard Klatt. Message number 4480 is 20 lines from Roscoe, RP to SysOp at 18:38:27 on 6th December, 80. Subject, Roscoe. Must conserve space. I am Roscoe, famous in L.A., California, and in the papers of L.A., for my phone computer freaking. Free access to all. Airline tickets, etc. Very impressed with your system. Not had chance to review all messages yet. I will be leaving you more detail message within 7 days, because I can be of great assist to you and all users. Basically, tell me what info you need, I can get anything. Free airline, free hotel, free calls. Best phone freak in L.A. I have reputation. And am known by many. Was on that incredible TV show in L.A. And am most powerful in L.A. A. Have DEC system, 1-2, password, and dial-ups in all 48 states. Have many private accounts. Can crash system within 20 days of request to do so. Can get any phone no do anything. More than just non-pub. Can run DMV via terminal. Can run Interpol via terminal. Can run airline ticket via terminal. Can run phone company via terminal. Free phone service. Free custom calling, etc. Can do much more. I have so much to say that I can't figure out what to say first. Excuse poor readability of this letter. Please call me at 213-469. Voice and leave message on how to call you. Of if you don't mind, I will get your number, but only if you don't mind. I also would want to know what how to get that phone fun book. Thank you for the excellent system, Roscoe. With the arrival of the Southern California phone freaks on 8BBS in late 1980, the board took a disturbing twist. The anonymity that once was a source of comfort now led to rising paranoia. Susan and Roscoe's war spilled out in bitter public messages, and the ominous possibility that not only the computer underground but law enforcement agency were reading 8BBS became a concern. Susan, who was growing more and more computer literate, was often antagonistic and haughty in her public postings. In February 1981, she claimed that Roscoe was collaborating with the enemy. Message number 6706 is 16 lines from Susan Thunder to all at 00:44:18 on 27 February 81. Subject, going on vacation. I am going on a cruise of the Caribbean and Bahamas and will be back in about a week or so. Don't expect any replies from me during that time. There is a very good chance that Roscoe is collaborating with the FBI to trap freaks. Given the trouble he has recently had, I know that something's amiss when he starts leaving public messages, especially to Anton, seeing as how he and Anton talk on the phone for several hours each day. Why would he leave the messages in a public system anyhow? Don't call the systems he leaves. It's either a trap, or he wants you all to do his revenge work for him. Have fun. Thunder at MITDM, MITAI. Outside of his spat with Susan, Roscoe was a good citizen on the BBS. Out of concern for the well-being of the board, he told other callers he believed the phone company had installed a line monitor on 8BBS. If telephone numbers were being recorded, then everyone was potentially in trouble, regardless of their aliases. The news cast a pall over the BBS. The rising paranoia also affected Roscoe. He began to contemplate getting out of the underground. Well, it seems that I, Roscoe, am getting too old to keep up with so much freaking. My information gathering is taking up about 4 to 5 hours of my time every day, and that's too much considering the fact that I work full-time and attend school full-time, soon to retire. Roscoe. Then, as if to help Roscoe out the door, Susan attacked him more viciously than ever, adding statutory rape to the list of crimes she wanted the others to believe Roscoe had committed. You are going to jail for a long time for crashing and zeroing the U.S. leasing RSTSE. They will get a conviction. Did your child molesting case ever get resolved? 16 complaints from as many different 11 to 15-year-old girls is pretty sick. They should have put you away a long time ago. In mid-1981, the private war that Susan had taken public began to wane, at least on 8BBS. After Roscoe and Susan were gone, 8BBS continued to operate for almost another year. The board had lost some of its computer underground edge and shifted back in the direction of less controversial computer hobbyist concerns. But its phone freak roots brought 8BBS crashing down. In early 1982, Bernard Klatt received a faster modem in the mail, a gift from some Philadelphia phone freaks wishing to improve the speed of 8BBS. He didn't know that it was stolen, purchased by mail using a false credit card. In April of 1982, while he was on vacation in Canada, a team of law enforcement officials from the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Office and telephone company security agents came to his apartment with a search warrant. A fire axe shattered his front door, and the agents confiscated all of the 8BBS disks and backup tapes. When he returned, Bernard Klatt wasn't prosecuted, as he hadn't known that the gift modem was stolen property. But when his employer found out about the search of his home and the nature of the computer hobby, he lost his job. The 8BBS era had ended.